Look at the stars. I created this universe, and how much more do I love you? And it was at that moment that kind of that relationship shifted from, I know a lot about God, to, oh, God loves me.
Welcome to Formation Conversations, a podcast of the Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona. We're having an ongoing conversation with friends about what it means to be formed into the image of Christ. Thank you for joining us. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Formation Conversations. This is a podcast of the Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona. And my name is Gray Ewing. I've done this podcast for a number of years now and have served on the ministry team, kind of, figure in the background, I guess you could say, at the Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona, but also a pastor full-time at a church called Ascension Church in Phoenix. And I'm delighted to spend this time with my good friend, Ted.
Thanks, Gray. I'm Ted Wiestee, the director of the Spiritual Formation Society. And I also am just so glad you've joined us for another conversation that, well, our heart with it is that these are conversations that touch on what it means to be formed in Christ by the Spirit. And so we have conversations and seek to hear the stories of others, praying that the Spirit shapes us and draws us closer to Christ as we share together. And so our guest today is someone that for many of you will be familiar. She's perhaps a familiar voice and certainly a beloved voice among our team and so many that have been a part of the Spiritual Formation Society. She is a four-time Emmy winner, a gold medal winner in the 1987 Olympics. No, I'm kidding. Can I build this big thing up? And then
there you go. Yeah.
Actually, what's really amazing is that Shelley is so much more amazing than if she had won a gold medal or won an Emmy. She is quite a wonderful person. And I just slipped by saying her name, but it's Shelley Sloterbeek. She's a part of our team and has been for, I think, 6 years now. Mm-hmm. And we're so grateful that you're with us today and part of this conversation. So welcome, Shelley.
Thanks, guys. It's so nice to be back with you again.
It's been like a, year or two, right?
Maybe yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember last time we had to go through how you say your last name. Like, we had to work that out on the podcast.
Is that right? No, that's right. It's not Slaughter.
That's right. No.
It's exactly. Slow. That's right. Shelley Slow. That's right. Oh, we're glad you're hanging out with us. And I really do appreciate you deeply, Shelley. It's a joy to get to serve with you. And I joke with Shelley all the time that she should really be running this operation. And the truth is she is. I mean, this thing would fall apart if not for her, just so gifted communications director. She's kind of our resident creative. She's so creative in so many different ways as an artist. She's a wife and a mom, a spiritual director. She leads retreats. And I just have so much fondness and appreciation for you, my friend. And so glad that we get to hang out with you. And so what we do is we have a conversation, but we have some food. We have something to eat. So we want to talk about that. Then we'll take a break and partake. And so, Shelley, do you want to say something about what you have? Because we're here in Arizona. Shelley is in Pennsylvania. We're on Zoom.
Yeah. So because it's later in the day and it's going to be dinner time when I'm done, I brought these little, they're like little crunchy chickpeas. These are ranch, though. And so they're really good for you. A lot of fiber. So if you need that little fiber protein hit, I don't know. There's just something about it. I'll try not to be too crunchy. And then I brought some iced tea that I made, which is a pear tea. It has some cinnamon, nutmeg kind of taste to it. It's really, I don't know. It feels like fall in a cup. So
I love it.
That's what I'm having today.
Great. I remember when chickpeas became something that I made fun of food being made out of, you know, to like, oh, this is actually good and I feel better when I eat them, you know, and that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
And like an actual health food that I like and don't just make fun of as like the, you know, the healthy version of whatever is made of meat or whatever, the substitute, which I used to just ruthlessly, you know, make fun of. And now it's like, no. And how many things are like that, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Tear down only to say, hey, there's probably a good reason for it. So,
well, I'll say something about what we're eating, and then I want you to just give your impression of it, because you, okay. This is kind of something different. And I'm glad, Shelley, that you have something healthy, because I think what we have, it's not, it would not be considered healthy food per se, but I think it's going to be really good. So, I think I've shared some before, and we actually ate a sandwich one time in the last handful of podcasts from a place where my daughter is a manager. It's called the Delicatessen here in Phoenix. And it's like, a New York style delicatessen bagel shop meets sort of a modern,
French bakery.
Yeah. Or something. I don't know. But anyway, so they've started doing this thing called Bagel of the Week. And so a couple of weeks ago, it was a lasagna bagel, which sounds so weird, but I had to go eat it. So it was so good. Last week they had the Elvis bagel, because it was Elvis's birthday. Some of you may know, January 8th.
Peanut butter. And
it was peanut butter and honey, cream cheese,
banana.
Bacon, banana, and maybe a peanut butter bagel. I mean, it was really interesting.
Right.
And this week is the queso birria bagel. So it's that birria that's been slow cooked and roasted for hours with a cream cheese. So anyway, you say something. What do you see when you look at it?
What I see when I look at this is the destruction of the rest of my afternoon of any meaningful labor. Because this is one of those afternoon killers. It's like,
oh my.
It's loaded. It's
ginormous.
It's got a topping of like, what is that, bread? Yeah, the top of the bagel with cheese melted over the sides. And the birria on the, or the meat on the inside and the egg and the birria sauce. Oh, man, this is going to be so good. And we're going to have to take a nap. That's the conclusion.
I thought maybe we could split one. I thought, well, that'd be kind of difficult. Maybe you just eat half of it and take the rest home. I don't know. But I thought we got to try it. Give it a shot. So there we go.
To such belong the kingdom of Jesus. You know, this type of amazing feast. You know,
yeah. Sometimes praying before a meal is can be almost ceremonial or formal, but praying before this might actually be wisdom.
That's right. Well, thanks, friends. We're gonna eat our snacks, such as they are, and we'll be back in just a few minutes to have a conversation with Shelley.
And we're back. Okay, so I think we should start with Shelley and just say, so how were those chickpeas?
So delightfully crunchy as I watched you eat that magnificent bagel sandwich.
I'm already feeling like I have to take a nap. I only ate half of it.
So delicious though, wasn't it? Oh my goodness, cream cheese, so good. I told Ted and Shelley that I'm going to have it for the rest of it for breakfast tomorrow. And I think that'll be
good. So anyway, the Delicatessen in Phoenix, new restaurant in the last few months, and maybe they'll be our sponsor, you know, either them or Diet Coke. We'll see who jumps in first.
And then Ted had a little surprise at the end, and he brought out some black and white cookies that they threw in the bag for us. So amazing.
Yeah.
And we had an extended conversation about lawnmowers and pizza.
We did. Yeah, and the cost of
it. And you're just going to have to live in the mystery of what that is, having cut off that middle section. Sorry, audience.
But I will give a little teaser. If anybody ever wants to ask me about this, I did have a dream last night about lawnmowers. So anyway, that's how we'll find out if anybody listens.
If anybody asks
lawnmowers.
There you go. That's that little Easter egg.
There you go.
We really don't have a long agenda, as we usually don't in these conversations. Really, you are the agenda, Shelley. So as you tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, it's been long enough. I think we need to go back a little bit on the journey of your journey towards spiritual formation. And is that the best place to start? Just kind of talking about that and how you came to today, and maybe one way that we framed it is how you viewed the Lord through different stages of your life. And if that resonates, but if there's another way to organize it, you can go for it. But yeah, how take us to the Shelley of today, kind of spiritually, I guess you could say.
Sure. I'll try to keep it, you know, brief. I have a few years to talk about here. When I was a little girl, we lived in a really rural part of Pennsylvania, and out behind my house was this row of pine trees, probably 20 pine trees, and they were soft pines. They weren't the pokey kind, and they had these tiny little pine cones. And I still vividly remember, I mean, I wouldn't have called it a thin place then, but I would now. I would go out underneath those pine trees and sit under the boughs and just rest my back against the trunk and listen. I just hear the birds and hear the breeze whispering through those the pine trees. And that was the first place I was really quiet. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to cry. But it's just such a beautiful memory for me to know that in that moment, I remember talking to God. That wasn't something that we talked about in my church, you know, like you had your prayers, you said, but you didn't talk to, I mean, you called God and a friend or Jesus, you know, your friend, but there was still this like very far, like thought that Jesus was far off. And so for me just to go out and spend some time under those trees and just talk to Jesus like he was there, it's really one of my sweetest first memories of just having a different kind of relationship than I saw anywhere else. And so yeah, I grew up in church. I grew up going to one of those programs where you learn a lot of Bible verses, and your motivators were like candy and little erasers shaped like animals. And, you know, when you're young, those are really great motivators. And so I learned a lot of scripture, which I'm really grateful for to this day. But I think it really led me on a path to know a lot about God, but not really know God or know what it was to experience God. And so I was left with a lot of like, I know all these things like rejoice always or, you know, pray without ceasing, but no one ever really taught me how to do those things. And so I went to college. I went to a Christian college, and there were three things that really that are really vivid to me about that experience. And the first was that's kind of where my deconstruction started. And really, it was just because I knew a lot about God, and that was really valued in my childhood and how I grew up. There were lots of black and whites. And when I got to college, there were people who did things different. And I was like, well, if God loves them and they're still doing these different things, then that's okay. What else doesn't quite fit? So that started some of the questions for me at that time. And the second thing was, I had a double major, and one of my majors was missions, and one of my missions professors, really, what his driving passion was that Jesus cared for people's bodies first and then their souls, and really kind of based that off of feeding the 5,000. So Jesus fed the people and then he spoke to them. And so for me, that was a huge paradigm shift. growing up, it was very much God really only cares about your soul, and that's your job as a Christian, like to evangelize and bring people to Christ. And so I was like, oh, so we're whole people. And so there's this call to, for me, it was a call to like the whole person. And it shifted how I would then go off into my adult life. And then the third thing was, I was a camp counselor when I was 19. And I had seven 7-year-olds. And one night during the week, most of the time we spent the night in the cabin, but one night you got to go out and take your kids and sleep next to a fire pit. And so I've got seven 7-year-olds. It was a beautiful, perfect night. They're all asleep and I'm just watching the fire die, looking at the sky, and I see the stars, and it's just vast and overwhelming. And I hear what, I mean, at that point, I thought it was audible. I heard God say to me, look at the stars. I created this universe, and how much more do I love you? And it was at that moment that kind of that relationship shifted from, I know a lot about God, to, oh, God loves me. And it was really at that point that things started to take like a little bit of a different path for me. Fast forward a little bit, you know, there were quite a number of years in there, lots of unlearning things I had learned as a child, really just starting to understand that Jesus loved me as a whole person, learning there was some lovely time in there with a therapist, learning that my emotions were okay and things like that. And I've always been a little bit interested in like monastic things. So maybe that goes back when I was in junior high, I was a nun in the Sound of Music. But so, you know, I would like Google these like monastic communities and a little intrigued by that. And then every once in a while it would just kind of come up like, oh, and then, I was also on the search for like my purpose. I thought maybe I wanted to be a counselor. And so I would Google, really Google ran me into 1,000 rabbit holes of randomness. But one day it took me to spiritual direction. And I had never heard of spiritual direction. It was not a thing that I knew anyone who did it. And I was like, well, that sounds neat. And at about the same time, I also had discovered centering prayer. And so I'll tell you a little bit more about that. But I think part of what was drawing me in was I had started a practice of sitting with the sunrise every morning. And you can do that in Phoenix, which is lovely. Sit outside on your patio with your cup of coffee and watch the sunrise, even when it's cold. At least I could. I just take my blanket out there. And it was really those extended periods of silence that I think led me to be more aware of how the Spirit was moving in my life. And onto things like, you know, monastic communities and spiritual practices, because no one I knew in my sphere of influence was doing those things. And so I felt like I had to rely really heavily on the Spirit to say, this is okay. Like, this is something that's okay to do. And then, you know, it's not too woo-woo or whatever. And so, my centering prayer was the first spiritual practice that I really came upon. And I came to it by Googling, how do I get rid of my anger? a number of years ago. There were political things happening that I didn't agree with. And at that point, I would read the news in the morning and then like it would really just tank my day. And so my husband at the time said, "You really got to stop reading the news." And I was like, "I can't stop reading the news." However, I wonder if there's a way to kind of release the anger so it doesn't ruin my day. I wanted to be informed, but not let it control how I was feeling. And so that's how I came to centering prayer, which is one of the physical things that happens as you practice centering prayer. Now, I realized later that that was probably, you know, that's not really the intention of centering prayer, but it is one of the byproducts of it. So I started practicing centering prayer by myself. I had no idea what I was doing. But I followed the instructions and I noticed after a number of weeks that I was able to release anger, that I was able to just be with God and really come back, as you do in centering prayer, come back to the center, like come back to God over and over. And I mean, there are other things that I've noticed about it as well, and how it's impacted me, like not judging a practice. And so that helped me release like a lot of judgment of my inner critic and things like that. And so really, yeah, centering prayer was the spiritual practice I entered into first. And it's something I still practice to this day. I really find some good grounding there. Yeah. And after that, I sensed that I should go to, I should do a training for spiritual direction, even though I had never had spiritual direction. I thought perhaps, maybe it would be just for me. I didn't know much about it. And so I entered into it, and a little while into it, a few months in, I said, "Oh, this is what I was meant to do." And so I'm very grateful for the Spirit guiding me gently and really holding me through some of those times when I didn't really know what I was doing, but it was to lead me to a place to where I am today. And so, yeah.
I want you to ask a question, Ted, but I just want to make a comment real quick about your story. Thank you for sharing those things, Shelley. I like that you're able, maybe in some ways that others struggle with, to see the gentleness of God throughout the story. Even in, you know, oftentimes we talk about the before and the after, and it's like very stark, like this was who God was, like fully, you know, we don't say that necessarily, but that's how we experience him. And in our memories, it kind of becomes before and after in some ways. But I like that you're saying, no, I was in the pines and I remember God was, you know, he was gentle with me even then. And even though I had to unlearn some things and perhaps deconstruct some things, he's kind of been with you the whole way. And I think that's a beautiful and mature kind of way of processing that.
Thank you.
Maybe I have an observation too, and it's not dissimilar from what you're saying, Gray, I think, but it's interesting to hear you share that and to realize that God's been pursuing you and you've been opening yourself to him from before you even had words for what was happening. And it sounds like in many ways, from the time you were a little girl, you had this deep awareness and a relationship that you were experiencing with God, but you weren't a part of a community that helped nurture that or give words for what was happening. Mm-hmm. And yet the Lord kept pursuing you and speaking to you and giving you really these mystical experiences that by his grace over time you had words for. Does that feel like it represents what you've been sharing?
Yes, absolutely. It was funny because when I started direction training, I started to meet with Luann Roberson. She's with us with the Spiritual Formation Society. And that's how I came to know the Spiritual Formation Society. But I started meeting with her. And after a few times, she just was like, "You're really getting this." And I wanted to be like, "I got it all along. I just didn't know it was okay. I just didn't have words or verbiage. And it's this thing in my soul that's been there that I didn't have anywhere for it else to go." So yes, that absolutely feels like how it was.
Let's stay with centering prayer for just a minute, because I know we could do a whole day workshop on centering prayer, right? Maybe just for those listening in a brief form, like what are you trying to do in centering prayer, and what does it look like in brief form, the kind of practice of that? If somebody's like, "That sounds interesting, I want to do that," where would you start with them?
Sure. So there are people who hold a really fast and tight definition of what centering prayer is, and you can Google that. And if you meet someone like that, they might not say that my way of doing it is correct. So I'll just throw that out there. Mine's a little bit looser. I'm a little bit more flexible in my spiritual practices. So for me, centering prayer is I take a few moments to get quiet. There's usually a short prayer. I usually take a few nice deep breaths, because I think we as humans, we bring our whole selves. And it's usually our body is the one that's making all the noise. So take a few nice deep breaths to kind of just settle in. So you choose a word, and you choose whatever word you want to come back to. Because inevitably, when you try to be quiet, there will be thoughts, there will be distractions, there will be noises, there will be an itch on your face, whatever. And so you choose that word to just return to. And after a few times of doing it, I just picked Jesus, because I thought the idea of just returning to Jesus sounded really lovely. And so that's still my word to this day, because I just love the idea of returning to Jesus. And so when I first started, I didn't know that you weren't supposed to think of images either. So at first, when I started centering prayer, I would imagine myself sitting with Jesus like on a hillside. And then we just sit there in quiet. And in a way, that's a little bit easier than true centering prayer, which you're not supposed to like think of imagery. But when you sit there, I have a little timer, it, you know, dings. The idea is to sit for 20 minutes. And I always wondered why the magical 20 minutes, what that was about. But actually, it's been proven to kind of start to rewire your brain, your neural pathways. And so so it's interesting that 20 minutes is kind of the standard for centering prayer. The first time I tried to sit for 20 minutes, it was probably excruciating. So that's kind of the idea. You just sit in this silence with God. When a distraction comes up or a thought or whatever, you just say the word and kind of come back to center with God. And just knowing that There's no need for words. This is just a time to sit and be without doing anything, and just to be in the presence of God. And as a person who grew up with a lot of like, you have to do all these things, like you have to read your Bible for an hour or whatever, and you have to spend your time in these prayer, you know, forms, and just to sit and be with God and not say anything was really foreign. And so to me, it was just a really lovely place to just sit and be and not have to do anything. And so that's kind of how centering prayer works. After about 20 minutes, you a bell rings or your timer goes off, and you gently come back, and that's it. But during that time, you just let those thoughts go and one of the hardest things is to not judge how the whole time went, because one day you might be really good at not letting the thoughts distract you, and another day it might completely derail you. And, you know, 5 minutes after, you know, you're like, oh, I was thinking about this thing and I've been thinking about it for a while. Oops. I think it was Thomas Keating who said, you know, every time there's a distraction, there was a woman who came to him and said, I had like 1,000 distractions, 1,000 thoughts during my time. And Thomas Keating said back to her, well, what a gift to be able to return to God 1,000 times. And so that's kind of, that helped me be able to not judge the practice. So, so there's a practice of non-judgment going on there as well. So,
yeah, I love that. So many people have found that centering prayer has been just foundational for their life of following Jesus, and really integrating a contemplative way into their life. And, you know, people say silence and solitude are kind of the twin practices, and centering prayer really, I mean, you can practice centering prayer with a group, but often it is in solitude as well. So I don't think you're that far off, by the way, from the traditional way of doing it. You just, a couple little things, you know, but I think most people say, yeah, that's so good. I have a question. This is kind of shifting a little bit, but it's still in the realm of what has helped you deepen and progress, we might say, in your contemplative life with Jesus. How has art been a part of that?
So I've always been a really creative person. I went to college my freshman year as a music performance major. So I've always been a little artsy, not particularly good at drawing or anything like that. So I kind of didn't do that sort of thing. I really love writing poetry, but I don't really let people know that very much. There's definitely this creative flow that I live in. And so actually, it was during my direction training, we had to pick a project and then kind of pick a practice and then present it to our cohort. And at first I picked labyrinths because, I mean, I liked labyrinths and I thought that was very practical. But something kept tugging at me like, no, don't do something practical. Do something that just sounds like fun. And so I found contemplative photography. And I love photography and I love taking pictures. And so I was like, well, I don't know what this is. So I just kind of entered into that. And that really got the creativity kind of flowing for me. And just really opened my experience to saying like, well, if we can do this with photography, what else can we do it in? And so, there was another paint collage class that I came to. I think it was during the pandemic, and it wasn't particularly a spiritual thing, but I really liked the process of it. And so I decided to take that process and incorporate different spiritual practices within it. And then at the end, you come out with this collage of different things, and then take some time to do like a Visio Divina. It's kind of like Lectio Divina, but we're looking at this painting that you've created. And so, yeah, just this I think there's just endless opportunities for people who even think they're not necessarily creative to engage with God in this more visual way. I love to even do Visio Divina with my directees, especially if we're at a park or somewhere outside. Like, right? The whole world is there, and you know, every space is sacred. And so we can experience, you know, we can see what God has to say to us here, even in the park or wherever it is. So.
Well, will you say something about every month you lead a thing called Creative Pause on Zoom? And can you say something about that?
Sure. This was not my idea. Creative Pause was not my idea. I was taking part of another group that did something similar, and I thought it would be fun to bring it to the society. So every month, we gather together. We have like a short little icebreaker kind of question that kind of goes along with whatever it is we're going to be reflecting on. And then we kind of enter, I lead a short meditation or reflection on something that might be, that might go along with whatever month it is or season, or maybe it's just a different theme entirely. And then we just, so that takes a little bit of time at the beginning. And then we all go off on our own for like 20, 25 minutes and create something based on that short reflection. So it's however you sense that God is leading you in that time, whatever it is that's drawing your attention, just taking a good 20, 25 minutes to reflect on it in whatever way you feel comfortable, whatever. Some people paint. We've got a couple of watercolors. It doesn't have to be, you know, this is not priceless art we're creating. Sometimes it's poetry. Sometimes it's prayer. Sometimes people just journal. And I think sometimes it's just, for some people, it can just be a time to just stop and think about something else and be in this space with God. Really, I think creativity in and of itself is a reflection of God, right? So God is absolutely creative and has given us this gift of coming into this union with him in this way. And I feel just honored and humbled to be able to hold that space for people who want to come in and take a few minutes to do that.
Love it.
I love that. That's awesome. I have struggled a lot with just doing for the sake of something, you know, just beauty, just because I think of myself as a creative person as well, but that creativity and utility are always so linked in my mind. And I think it's because of my ministry training and because stage of life, you know, like the time for poor kids and everything. But I've been collaging on Sunday afternoons myself, which is really so random to say. I think this is the first time I've admitted this to people, but I've been cutting out stuff out of magazines and books and stuff like that and building these things. And I realized the other day, it's the first time in a really long time that I just did something for the sake of itself, you know, for the sake of the beauty of the moment. Or, yeah, I wonder what that is, why that's so hard for, you know, people to embrace. And maybe it's not, maybe that's just my experience, but I think people need permission to do that kind of thing sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. I struggled with that for a long time, actually. I was like, well, why would I spend time doing something that doesn't, you know, doesn't have any value at the end of it, really, quote unquote value. I mean, there is value in it, but like, if I can't sell it, why, you know, what's the point? But I think sometimes that for me, I saw it as like a product of our culture. And I was like, okay, well, I don't have to live into that anymore. I can let go. And so I can just create to create. And honestly, sometimes there are things that come up, even a lot of times there, Ted leads our staff in Lectio Divina, and there are these thoughts and they come up, and sometimes they just won't go until I do something with them until I get it out on paper, or, you know, I paint something or I write a poem, and then I can leave. Then again, that's like my way of processing now. And so, yeah. So I think you are not alone, Gray, for sure.
Well, even theologically, like, all that is, you know, we believe is the overflow of God's love, right? I mean, we weren't created for utilitarian purpose to fulfill some void in God, right? I mean, he had fullness in himself in the Trinity. And then he, out of the overflow of his love, he created this world and brought many sons and daughters to glory and all the things that he has done. And so there's something very godlike about letting something overflow out of you that then is just for your enjoyment. And there might be purpose in it, but it doesn't have to be the starting reason.
Yeah. And if all of that is my prayer, then it's everything.
Well, thanks for the ways that you lead out and encourage others to creative expression. We have, as we kind of bring this to a close here, we have one kind of final question we've been asking people that has been so much fun. And the question is, with where you are now in your life, if you could go back and talk to 25-year-old Shelley, what would you tell 25-year-old Shelley?
Oh, goodness. I would tell her to be true to herself. She knows who she is, and to not lose the awe and wonder. There was a time in my life where that kind of went away. And as we were just talking about, I was trying to do the very acceptable cultural norm. And it's been a gift to let it go. So I would tell her, just don't even bother with that. So, and just to rest in that awe and wonder.
It's beautiful. Thank you for that gift.
Yeah. Thank you, Shelley, for your time.
Yeah. You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Beautiful story. And I want to say thank you to all of our friends who are listening in to our podcast. Thank you. We value you listening every time we're able to release one of these podcasts. It's a special moment for us, but then to be able to share it is wonderful. So the Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona has a website, sfsaz.org. And what are some of the things, Ted, that people can find there if they're looking for help?
Oh, gosh, if you're looking for a spiritual director, we have a directory for that. And we have some resources. And then just the different gatherings we have and different opportunities to connect, things like the Creative Pause. You'll find that on our events page, and you can find out how to get connected with that. And depending on when you hear this particular podcast, we have our annual conference coming up, Living Fully in an Age of Anxiety, that we hope you could be a part of. So all kinds of resources. The conference coming up at the end of February. And then also one of the other things is, as our ministry grows, we have SFS communities in now several other states. So if you're listening in, if you happen to be listening from somewhere else besides Arizona, I encourage you to check out spiritualformationsociety.org, which will get you connected with the different SFS communities in the state of Washington, Texas, Arkansas. And it looks like this year we may be having some other communities come on as well. So lots to check out.
Thank you, friends. We'll see you next time.